Lily nodded and went with Princess Miss Kitty, barely bothering to wave goodbye to her mother. Maya got back in her car and booted up the Growin' Up app. She checked the in-room camera. Lily was slipping into an Elsa from Frozen costume. Let it go, Maya sang to herself as she started driving to her in-laws. She flipped on the radio to get her own voice out of her head and replace it with whatever inanity was on the morning drive. People who host morning radio programs cannot believe how funny they are. She moved it to AM. Did anyone listen to AM anymore? And put on the all-news channel. There was comfort to the almost military precision and predictability. Sports on the quarter hour, traffic every 10 minutes. She was distracted, half listening at best, when a story caught her attention. Notorious hacker Corey the Whistle has promised a treasure chest of new leaks this week that he claims will not only embarrass a leading official in the current administration, but also will definitely lead to resignation and most likely prosecution. Despite it all, despite what she said about being out of Corey the Whistle's awful reach, Maya still felt a fresh shiver surge through her. Shane had wondered why Corey hadn't released it all, if he was just biding his time to drop the bigger bomb, and yes, the word choice was worthy of a sad ha-ha, on her. She had, of course, wondered that too. Maya Stern was old news now, but the potential was there. Big secrets don't stay secret. They have a way of coming back when you least expect them, rippling and reverberating and causing... Again, she recognized how often military lingo slips into our regular vocabulary. Massive collateral damage. Farnwood was an old-school rich people estate. Before Maya met Joe, she had assumed such places were the stuff of history books or fiction. They are not. She drove up to a gate manned by Morris. Morris had been working the gate since the early 80s. He lived in the same workers' compound as Isabella's family. Hey, Morris. He scowled at her, as he always did, reminding her in his own way that she had just married into this family and really wasn't blood. There might have been more to Morris's scowl today, something that could be explained by either lingering sadness at the death of Joe, or more likely, the gossip surrounding Isabella and the pepper spray attack. Morris grudgingly pressed the button, and the gate opened so slowly it was hard to see with the naked eye. Maya drove up the rolling hill, past a grass tennis court and a full-size soccer field. It's called a pitch, Joe had told her, neither of which Maya had ever seen used, and arrived at a Tudor mansion that reminded her of Bruce Wayne's on the old Batman TV show. She half expected a bunch of men dressed for a fox hunt to greet her, but instead, her mother-in-law Judith stood alone by the door. Maya parked by the stone path. Judith was a beautiful woman. She was petite, with big round eyes and dainty, doll-like features. She looked younger than her years. There had been some work done, Botox, maybe a little something around the eyes, but it was tasteful, and most of her youthful appearance was due either to genetics or her daily yoga routine. Her figure still drew second glances. Men were drawn to her big time, looks, brains, money. But if she dated, Maya didn't know about it.
I think she has secret lovers, Joe had told her once.
Why secret? But Joe had just shrugged it off. She was rumored to have been a West Coast hippie back in the day. Maya believed it. If you looked closely, you could still see a hint of something untamed in the eyes and the smile. Judith came down the stairs but stopped on the second to last one, making her and Maya about the same height. They exchanged a cheek kiss, Judith looking past her the whole time.
Where is Lily?
In daycare. Maya waited for some surprise to register on her mother-in-law's face. None did.
You need to work it out with Isabella.
She told you? Judith did not bother replying. So help me work it out, Maya said. Where is she?
My understanding is Isabella is traveling.
For how long?
I don't know. In the meantime, I suggest you use Rosa.
I don't think so.
You know that she used to be Joe's nanny.
I do.
And?
I don't think so.
So you'll keep her in daycare?
Judith shook her head in disapproval.
Years ago, I was involved in daycare facilities, professionally speaking.
She was a board-certified psychiatrist and still saw clients twice a week at an office on the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Do you remember all those child abuse cases in the 80s and 90s?
Sure. What, you were called in as an expert?
Something like that.
I thought they were all found to be bogus, child hysteria or something.
Yes, Judith said. The caregivers were exonerated.
So?
The caregivers were exonerated, she repeated. But maybe the system wasn't.
I'm not following.
The children in the daycare were so easy to manipulate. Why?
Maya shrugged.
Think about it. These kids came up with all these horror stories. I ask myself why. Why were these children so eager to say what they thought their parents wanted to hear? Maybe, just maybe, if their parents had given them more attention.
That, Maya thought, was quite a stretch.
The point is, I know Isabella. I've known her since she was a little girl. I trust her. I don't know or trust the people at daycare, and neither do you.
I have something better than trust, Maya said.
Pardon?
I can watch them.
What?
Safety in numbers. There are plenty of witnesses, including me. She held up the app, pressed the button, and there was Lily in her Elsa costume. Judith took hold of the phone and smiled at the image.
What is she doing?
Maya took a look. Based on the way she's spinning, I'd say she's dancing to Frozen.
Cameras everywhere, Judith said with a shake of her head. It's a new world.
She handed the phone back to Maya.
So what happened with you and Isabella?
It would not be smart to get into it now, especially when they were gathering to hear Joe's will. I wouldn't worry about it.
May I be blunt?
Are you ever not? Judith smiled.
In that way, we are the same, you and I.
Well, in many ways we are.
We both married into this family.
We are both widows. And we both speak our minds. I'm listening.
Are you still seeing your doctor?
Maya said nothing.
Your circumstances have changed, Maya. Your husband was murdered. You witnessed it. You could have been killed. You are now raising a child on your own. When you stack all these current stresses on top of your previous diagnosis,
what did Isabella tell you?
Nothing, Judith said.
She put her hand on Maya's shoulder.
I could treat you myself, but...
That wouldn't be a good idea.
Exactly. It would be wrong. I should stick to my roles as doting grandmother and supportive mother-in-law. My point is, I have a colleague, a friend, really. She trained with me at Stanford. I'm sure the VA psychiatrists are competent, but this woman is the best in her field.
Judith?
Yes?
I'm fine. A voice said,
Mom?
Judith turned around. Caroline, her daughter and Joe's sister, was there. The two women looked alike. You could see that they were mother and daughter. And yet where Judith always looked strong and confident, Caroline always seemed to be mid-cower.
Hello, Maya.
Caroline. More exchanged cheek kisses.
Heather is waiting for us in the library, Caroline said. Neil is already there.
Judith's expression turned grim.
Come, let's go then.
Judith stood between Caroline and Maya, letting them both take her by the arms. They walked in silence through the grand foyer and past the ballroom. There was a portrait of Joseph T. Burkett, Sr. above the fireplace. Judith stopped and stared at him for a moment.
Joe looked so much like his father,
Judith said. He did, Maya agreed.
Another thing we have in common,
Judith said with a hint of a smile.
Same taste in men, I suppose.
Yep. Tall, dark, and handsome, Maya said. I'm not sure that makes us stand out. Judith liked that.
So true.
Caroline opened the double doors and they all entered the library. Maybe it was because Maya had just seen little girls dressing up, or maybe it was because she had recently watched Beauty and the Beast with Lily, but the library reminded Maya of the Beast's. The room was 2 stories high with built-in bookshelves of dark oak from floor to ceiling. The carpets were oriental and ornate. A chandelier hung from the ceiling. There were 2 rolling ladders set on cast iron rails. A large antique globe opened to reveal a crystal decanter of cognac. Neil, Joe's surviving brother, was already having at it.
Hey, Maya.
More cheek kissing, though sloppier. Everything with Neil was sloppy. He was one of those pear-shaped guys who looked sloppy no matter how meticulously tailored a suit he wore.
Want one?
He gestured to the decanter. No thanks, Maya said.
You sure?
Judith's lips were pursed. It's 9 in the morning, Neil.
But 5 p.m. someplace. Isn't that what they always say?
He laughed. No one joined him.
Besides, it's not every day you get to hear the reading of your brother's will.
Judith looked away. Neil was the baby, the youngest of the 4 Burkett children. Joe was firstborn, followed a year later by Andrew, who had died at sea. That was how the family always put it. And then came Caroline, and finally Neil. Oddly enough, it was Neil who ran the family empire now. Joseph Sr., never one for sentimentality when it came to money, had placed him in charge over his older siblings. Joe had shrugged it off.
Neil is ruthless, he'd told her once. Dad always liked ruthless.
Maybe we should all sit, Caroline suggested. Maya looked at the chairs, the opulent burgundy chairs, and flashed back to her dream. For a moment, she could see Joe in that tuxedo, legs crossed, cuffs creased, looking off, unreachable.
Where's Heather? Judith asked.
I'm right here.
They all turned to the voice in the doorway. Heather Howell had been the family attorney for the past decade. Before that, Heather's father, Charles Howell III, worked for the Burkettes. Before that, her grandfather, Charles Howell II, held the post. No word on the first Charles Howell.
Fine, Judith said. Let's get this started.
It was an odd thing with Judith, how easily she slipped from warm maternal figure to professional shrink to, as she was right now, starchy old-world matriarch complete with a British-tinged accent. They began to take their seats, but Heather Howell stayed standing. Judith looked back at her.
Is there a problem?
I'm afraid there is.
Heather was one of those attorneys who exude confidence and competence. You wanted her on your side. The first time Maya had met Heather Howell had been immediately after Joe's marriage proposal. Heather had called her into this very room and slapped down a prenup agreement. In a no-nonsense yet not unfriendly tone, she had told Maya, "Signing this document is non-negotiable." Now, for the first time, Heather Howell looked a little lost, or at least out of her comfort zone.
Heather? Judith said.
Heather Howell turned to her.
What's going on?
I'm afraid we will have to postpone the reading of the last will and testament.
Judith looked at Caroline. Nothing. She looked at Maya.
Maya just stood there.
Judith turned back to Heather.
Do you care to explain why?
There are certain protocols we have to follow.
What kind of protocols?
It's nothing to worry about, Judith.
Judith did not like that reply.
Do I look like I'm in the mood to be patronized?
No, you don't.
So why can't we read Joe's will?
It isn't that we can't read it,
Heather said, weighing each word before allowing it to leave her mouth.
But?
But there has been a delay.
And again, I ask, why?
It's paperwork, really, Heather said.
What do you mean?
We don't have an official death certificate.
Silence.
He's been dead almost 2 weeks, Judith said. We had a funeral.
Closed casket, Maya suddenly remembered. It hadn't been Maya's decision. She'd let Joe's family handle that one. It hadn't mattered to her. Death was death. Let them perform whatever ritual eased their pain the most. Closed casket had, of course, made perfect sense. Joe had been shot in the head. Even with the best work a mortician could do, you probably wouldn't want to see that. Judith's voice again.
Heather?
Yes, of course, I know. I mean, I was at the funeral. But this probate requires a death certificate, some kind of proof. It is an unusual case here. I'm having one of my associates check through the case law. Because Joe was, well, murdered, we need verification from official authorities within the police department. I was just informed that it will take a little more time to secure the proofs.
How long? Judith asked.
I really can't say, but I hope it won't be more than a day or two now that we are on it. Neil spoke for the first time.
What do you mean, proofs? You mean like proof Joe is dead?
Heather Howell started fiddling with her wedding band. I really haven't gotten all the facts yet, but before we can enter probate, this, let's call it a snafu, shall we? This snafu just has to be untangled. I have my best people on it. I'll be in touch soon. With everyone momentarily stunned silent, Heather Howell quickly spun and left the room. Chapter 12. It's nothing, Judith said, leading Maya back toward the foyer. Maya did not reply. This is how lawyers are. Everything has to be just so, partially for your protection, mostly to up the billable hours. She tried to smile at that, but it wouldn't hold. My strong belief is that there is just some red tape due to the circumstances. Her voice faded away then, as though she was just realizing that she was talking about Joe, not some legal matter.
Two sons, Judith said in a hollow voice. I'm sorry. No mother should have to bury two sons.
Maya took her hand. No, she said. No mother should.
Nor should a young woman have to bury a sister and a husband.
Death follows you, Maya.
Maybe it followed Judith, too. Judith held on to her hand another moment, then let go.
Please stay in touch, Maya.
Of course. They headed outside into the sun. Judith's black limousine was waiting. The chauffeur held the door open.
Bring Lily around soon.
I will.
And please work it out with Isabella.
The sooner I can see her, Maya said, the sooner we can put this misunderstanding behind us.
I'll see what I can do.
Judith slid into the back. The chauffeur closed the door. Maya stood there until the limo was down the drive and out of sight. When she got to her car, Caroline was waiting.
Do you have a moment to talk? Caroline asked.
Not really, Maya thought. She was eager now to be on her way. She had places to go. Two, to be exact. First, she wanted to stop in the servants' area again and maybe surprise Rosa. If that didn't work, she had a backup plan to locate Isabella. Second, she needed to go to Leather and Lace and see what connection there could possibly be between this gentleman's club and her late sister. Caroline put her hand on Maya's arm.
Please?
Yeah, okay.
But not here.
Caroline's eyes darted about as she said,
Let's take a walk.
Maya bit back a sigh. Caroline started down the stone driveway. Her little dog, Laszlo, a Havanese, followed. The dog was off leash, but really, when you owned this much land, where could Laszlo go that would be a danger? Maya wondered what it must have been like to grow up here, in a place of such opulence, beauty, and tranquility, where everywhere you looked, the grass, the trees, the edifices, everything belonged to you. Caroline veered to the right. Laszlo stayed with them.
My father put that in for Joe and Andrew.
Caroline smiled in the direction of the soccer pitch.
The tennis court was my domain.
I liked tennis. I practiced a lot. My father saw to it that the best pro from Port Washington came out and gave me private lessons. But I never loved it, you know? You can practice all you want, and I had some talent. I was first singles in my prep school. But to reach that next level, you have to be obsessed. You can't fake that.
Maya nodded because she didn't know what else to do. Laszlo walked with his tongue out. Caroline was working up to something. Maya couldn't push it. She would just have to be patient.
But Joe and Andrew, they loved soccer. Loved it. They were both great players. Joe was a striker, as I'm sure you know. Andrew was a goalkeeper. I can't tell you how many hours the two of them would be out there, Joe practicing shots while Andrew practiced stopping them. That net is, what, a quarter mile from the main house, would you say?
I guess.
You could hear their laughter rolling up those hills and right through the windows. My mom would sit in the parlor and just smile.
Caroline smiled now. It was her mother's smile, and yet it was also a facsimile, somehow not nearly as magnetic or powerful as the original.
Do you know much about my brother Andrew?
No, Maya said.
Joe didn't talk about him?
He had, of course. Joe had revealed a huge secret about his brother's death that Maya had no intention of sharing with Caroline or anyone else.
The world thinks my brother fell off that boat.
She and Joe had been at a resort in Turks and Caicos, lying naked in bed. They were both on their backs, staring up at the ceiling. Joe's eyes glistened in the moonlight. The window was open, and the ocean breeze made her skin tingle. Maya had taken his hand then.
The truth is, Andrew jumped.
Maya said, he didn't talk about him much.
Too painful, I suppose. They were so close.
Caroline stopped walking.
Please don't misunderstand me, Maya. Joe and Andrew both loved me and, well, Neil was the annoying little brother they tolerated. But really, it was the two of them, Joe and Andrew. They were both at the same prep school when Andrew died. Did you know that?
Maya nodded.
Franklin Biddle Academy, down near Philadelphia. They lived in the same dorm, played on the same soccer team. We have this huge house, but Joe and Andrew still wanted to share a bedroom.
Andrew killed himself, Maya. He was in that much pain and I never saw it.
Maya?
She turned to Caroline.
What did you make of today? Of this postponement?
I don't know.
No theories?
Your attorney made it sound like it was a bureaucratic snafu.
And you believe that?
Maya shrugged.
I was in the military. Bureaucratic snafus are practically the norm.
Caroline looked down.
What?
Maya said.
Did you see him?
Who?
Joe,
Caroline said. Maya felt her entire body stiffen. What are you talking about?
His body,
Caroline said softly.
Before the funeral. Did you see Joe's body?
Maya slowly shook her head.
No.
Caroline raised her head.
Don't you think that's odd?
It was a closed casket.
Was that your choice?
No.
Then whose?
I assume your mother's. Caroline nodded as if that made sense.
I asked to see him.
Forget peaceful and tranquil. The silence of their surroundings started to feel suffocating. Maya tried to take deep, even breaths. There was always something in the silence, all silences. Something she both cherished and feared.
You've seen your share of dead people, haven't you, Maya?
I don't understand what you're getting at.
When soldiers die, why is it so important that you bring the bodies home?
Caroline was annoying her now.
Because we don't leave anyone behind. Yes, I've heard that, but why? I know you'll say it's to honor the dead and all that, but I think there's something more. The soldier is dead. You can't do anything more for him, or her, I don't mean to be sexist. You bring the body home not for the dead, but for the family, don't you? The loved ones at home, they need to see the deceased. They need the body, they need that closure.
Maya was not in the mood to explore this subject. What's your point?
I didn't just want to see Joe. I needed to see him. I needed to make it real. If you don't see a body, you don't quite get it. It's like...
Like what?
Like maybe it didn't happen. Like maybe they're still alive. You dream about them.
You dream about the dead, too.
Oh, I know. But it's different without closure. When we lost Andrew at sea...
Again, that stupid phraseology.
I never saw his body either.
That surprised Maya.
Wait, why not? They recovered it, didn't they? That's what I was told.
You don't believe it? Caroline shrugged.
I was young. They never showed me his body. Closed casket again. I have visions, Maya. Daydreams about him, still to this day. I have these dreams where Andrew never died, and I wake up and he's standing right there by that soccer net, and he's smiling and making saves. Oh, I know he's not here. I know he died in an accident, but I also don't know. Do you see? I could never accept Andrew's death. Sometimes I think he survived the fall and swam off, and he's on an island somewhere, and one day I'll see him and it'll all be okay. But if I could have seen his body...
Maya stood very still.
So I knew. I knew this time I couldn't make that mistake again. That's why I asked to see Joe's body. I begged, really. I didn't care if he looked messed up. That might have even helped me in a way. I needed to do it so I'd accept that he was really gone, you know?
And you didn't see him? Caroline shook her head.
They wouldn't let me.
Who wouldn't let you? She looked back toward the goalie net.
Two of my brothers. Both dead so young. It could just be bad luck, you know, it happens. But in both cases, I didn't see the body. Did you listen to Heather? No one will officially declare Joe dead. Both my brothers, it's like...
She turned and stared straight into Maya's eyes.
Like they could both be alive.
Maya did not move. But they aren't.
I know it sounds crazy.
It is crazy.
You had a fight with Isabella, right? She told us. She said you were screaming about seeing Joe. Why did you do that? What did you mean?
Caroline, listen to me. Joe is dead.
How can you be so sure?
I was there.
But you didn't see him die, right? It was dark. You were running away by the third shot.
Listen to me, Caroline. The police came. They've been investigating.
He didn't get up from the two shots I saw and walk away. The cops even arrested two suspects. How do you explain all that?
Caroline shook her head.
What? You won't believe me.
Try me.
The officer leading the investigation,
Caroline said.
His name is Roger Kearse.
That's right. Silence. Caroline, what is it?
I know this is going to sound crazy.
Maya wanted to shake the information out of her.
We have this private bank account. I won't go into details on it, they aren't important. But let's just say you'd never trace it back to the source. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. Wait, is it called WTC?
No.
It's not out of Houston?
No, it's offshore. Why were you asking me about Houston?
It doesn't matter, go on. You have a private overseas account. Caroline stared at her a beat too long.
So I started going through some recent online transactions.
Maya nodded, tried to look encouraging.
Most of the transfers went to numbered accounts or offshore holdings, stuff that bounces to various places so it can't be traced back. Again, there is no reason to go into details, but there was a name in there, too. Several payments made to a Roger Kearse.
Maya took the blow without so much as blinking. Are you sure?
That's what I saw.
Show me.
What?
You have online access to the account, Maya said. So show it to me. Caroline tapped in the password.
The same message, error, unauthorized access, popped across the screen for the third time. I don't understand, Caroline said.
She sat in front of the computer in the library.
Maya?
Maya stood behind her and stared at the screen. Don't rush, she told herself. Think it through. But this part didn't take much thought. She quickly whittled down the possibilities and realized that one of two things was happening here. Either Caroline was playing her, or someone had changed passwords so Caroline could no longer access the online financial records.
What exactly did you see? Maya asked.
I told you, money transfers to Roger Kearse.
How many?
I don't know. 3, maybe?
How much were they?
$9,000 each.
$9,000. That made sense. Anything below 10 grand could go unreported.
What else? Maya asked. What do you mean?
When was the first payment made?
I don't know.
Before or after Joe was murdered?
Caroline put her finger to her lip and thought about it. I don't know for absolute sure, but...
Maya waited.
But I'm almost positive the first one was before.
Two ways for Maya to play it. One was the obvious. Confront Judith. Confront Neil. Confront them immediately and demand answers. But there were problems with the direct approach. Logistically speaking, neither one of them was home right now. But more than that, what did she hope to find? If they were hiding something, would they admit to it? Even if she somehow forced them to log into that account, wouldn't they have gotten rid of the evidence or covered it up somehow by now? And cover up what? What did Maya think was happening here? Why would the Burkett family pay off the homicide cop who was investigating Joe's death? Did that make any sense at all? Let's assume that Caroline was on the up and up. If the payoffs had started before the murder, well, again, how could they possibly know he'd be the detective who'd catch the case? No, that made no sense. Caroline hadn't been sure about the date of the first payment anyway. It would make more sense. More sense was in this case just a hair above absolutely no sense at all, if the payments started after the murder. But to what end? See several moves ahead. That was the key. And when Maya looked several moves ahead of directly confronting either Neil or Judith, assuming they were the ones behind the alleged payments, she saw nothing substantially beneficial. She'd be revealing herself to them without getting any valuable information in return. Be patient. Learn what you can first. Then, if need be, confront. They say an attorney should never ask a question unless she already knows the answer. In a similar vein, a good soldier doesn't attack unless she's already calculated and can counter the most likely outcomes. She'd had a plan before all this. Get hold of Isabella and make her talk. Figure out why Claire was secretly calling Leather and Lace. Stick to the plan. Start with Isabella's house. Hector answered the door.
Isabella is not here.
Mrs. Burkett thinks she and I should talk.
She's out of the country, Hector said.
Bullshit. Until when?
She'll call you. Please don't come back.
He shut the door. Maya had expected this. As she headed back toward her car, she circled around Hector's truck and, without breaking stride, slapped a magnetic real-time GPS tracker under his bumper. Out of the country, my ass. The tracker was simple. You download the app, you bring up the map, you can see exactly where the vehicle is now and where it has gone. They weren't hard to get. 2 stores at the mall sold them. Maya didn't believe for a second that Isabella had left the country. But Hector, she bet, would eventually lead Maya to his sister. Chapter 13. Some might figure that Leather and Lace would be closed until the nighttime. They'd be wrong. Located in the shadow of MetLife Stadium, home to both the New York Giants and Jets, Leather and Lace opened at 11 a.m. and offered a deluxe, sumptuous lunch buffet. Maya had been to strip clubs before, mostly during leaves. The guys blew off steam there. She'd gone once or twice. They obviously weren't for her, but you'd never guess that from the star treatment female clients received. Every pole dancer hit on her like mad. Maya had theories, less to do with the dancers being gay than being anti-male, but she kept them to herself. Leather and lace had the prerequisite meathead at the door. 6'4", probably 300 pounds, no neck, buzz cut, black shirt so tight it worked like a tourniquet on his biceps.
Well, hello,
he said, like someone had offered him a free appetizer.
What can I do for you, little lady?
Oh, boy. I need to talk to your manager. He narrowed his eyes and looked her up and down, beef inspection, and nodded.
You got references?
I would like to speak to your manager. Meathead gave her the once-over for at least the third time.
You're a little old for this line of work, he said.
Then he nodded again and awarded her with his best smile.
But me? I think you're smoking hot.
That means a lot, Maya said. Coming from you.
I'm dead serious. You are hot. Great tight bod.
It's all I can do not to swoon. Your manager? A few minutes later, Maya passed the surprisingly extensive buffet. The crowd was still light. The men kept their heads down. Two women danced on stage with the enthusiasm of middle schoolers waking up for a math test. They couldn't have looked more bored without prescribed sedation. Forget your morals. This was Maya's real problem with clubs like this. They had all the eroticism of a stool sample. The manager wore yoga shorts and a sleeveless top. He told her to call me Billy. Billy was short, spent too much time in the gym, and had thin fingers. His office was painted bright avocado. The computer had monitors watching the dressing room and stages. The camera angles reminded Maya of the ones that shot Lily at growing up.
First off, let me just say you're hot, okay? You're hot.
So I keep hearing, Maya replied.
And you got that whole toned athletic thing going on. That's popular nowadays. Like that hot chick in the Hunger Games. What is her name?
Jennifer Lawrence.
No, not the actress. The character. See, we do the whole fantasy thing here, so we'd want you to be...
Billy snapped his thin fingers.
Katniss. That was the lead's name, right? The hot chick in that leather outfit with the bow and arrow and whatever. Katniss ever something. But,
his eyes widened.
Oh, crap. This is sheer genius. Instead of Katniss, we will call you Catnip. Get it?
From behind them, a woman's voice said, she's not here for work, Billy. Maya turned to see a woman in glasses. She was mid-30s and wore a classy, tailored suit that stuck out in here like a cigarette in a health club.
What do you mean?
Billy asked. She's not the type.
Ah, come on, Lulu, that's not fair,
Billy said.
You're just being prejudiced.
Lulu half smiled at Maya. You find tolerance in the strangest places. Then to Billy, I'll handle this. Billy left the office. Lulu moved over and checked the monitors. She started clicking the mouse, circling through the various surveillance cameras. What can I do for you? Lulu asked. There was no reason to play around. My sister used to call here. I'm trying to find out why. We accept table reservations. Maybe that was it. Yeah, I don't think so. Lulu shrugged. I don't know what to tell you. Lots of people call here. Her name was Claire Walker. Does that name mean anything to you? Doesn't matter. Even if it did, I wouldn't tell you. You know what kind of business we run here. We pride ourselves on discretion. Nice to be proud of something. Don't play the judgmental card, Miss Maya. Maya Stern. And my sister was murdered. Silence. She had a hidden phone. Maya pulled it out and brought up the history. The only calls she made or received were from here. Lulu did not so much as glance down. I'm sorry for your loss. Thank you. But there is nothing I can tell you. I can turn this phone over to the police. A woman kept this phone a secret. She only called here. Then she ended up murdered. You don't think the cops will be all over this place? No, Lulu said. I don't. But even if they chose that route, we have nothing to hide. How do you know the phone was even your sister's? What? Where did you find it? In her home? Does she live with someone else? Maybe the phone was theirs, not hers. Was she married? Did she have a boyfriend? Maybe it was his.
It wasn't.
You sure? 100%? Because, and this will shock you, men have been known to lie about coming here. Even if you could somehow prove that the phone did indeed belong to your sister, dozens of people use the phone here. Dancers, bartenders, waitstaff, chefs, janitors, dishwashers, even customers. How long ago was your sister killed?
4 months ago.
We delete our video surveillance files every 2 weeks. Again, it's about discretion. We don't want someone getting a warrant to see if their husband was here or anything. So even if you wanted to look at tape...
I get it, Maya said.
Lulu gave her a patronizing smile. I'm sorry we couldn't be more help.
Yeah, you seem pretty broken up about it.
If you'll excuse me. Maya stepped toward her. Forget the legal for a second. You know I'm not out to catch an indiscretion. I'm calling on your humanity. My sister was murdered. The police have all but given up hope of solving the case. The only fresh lead is this phone. So I'm asking you as a human being to please help me.
Lulu was already moving toward the door.
I'm terribly sorry about your loss, but I can't help you.
There was an explosion of sunlight when Maya exited the club. It was always nighttime inside places like this, but in the real world, it was barely noon. The sun beat down upon her with both fists. Maya squinted and shaded her eyes with her hand, staggering like Dracula dragged into daylight.
Didn't get the job?
Meathead asked.
My loss.
Shame.
Yeah.
So now what? She could indeed do as threatened and bring it to the police. That, of course, meant bringing it to Kearse. Did Maya trust him? Good question.
Either he was in some ways taking payoffs, or Caroline was lying. Or Caroline was mistaken. Or didn't matter. She didn't trust Caroline. She didn't trust Kearse. So who did she trust? Right now, it didn't pay to trust anyone. But if there was still one person she believed was telling the truth, it was Shane. Which meant, of course, she would have to be careful. Shane was her friend, but he was also a straight shooter. She had already pushed him to do something that he hadn't liked. She was supposed to see him that night at the gun range. Maybe she would talk to him there, but now that she really thought about it, that seemed unlikely. He was starting to ask too many questions. Wait. Hold up. Maya had been walking through the parking lot, still blinking away the onslaught of the light change when she spotted it. At first, it meant nothing. She was seeing it at a great distance, and there were plenty of them on the road. Plenty of red Buick Veranos. This one was parked in the far corner of the lot, half hidden between a fence and a Cadillac Escalade, a big SUV. She looked back toward the door. Meathead was checking out her ass. Big surprise. She waved and started toward the red vehicle. She needed to see if the license plate matched. Along the top of the fence, Maya could see surveillance cameras. But so what? Would anyone be watching right now? And if so, what would be the harm? She had a plan of sorts. In one of her very rare smart moves recently, not wanting to get caught unprepared again, she'd bought several GPS trackers at the mall. The first was, of course, on Hector's truck. A second was in her purse, ready to go. The plan was simple and obvious. First, make sure she had the right car by checking the license plate. Second, walk past the red Buick and slap the GPS tracker under the bumper. The second part might provide a little bit of a problem. The car was parked in the corner against a fence, and a casual stroll past it, if spotted, would be awkward at best. Still, the lot was quiet. The few people who pulled in parked on the other side, and while most people might not have any reason to be embarrassed about being here, they weren't exactly puffing out their chests with pride about it either. The license plate started to come into view, and yes, it was the same car. WTC Limited. A holding company, maybe, for leather and lace?
Wrong way.
It was Meathead. She turned. He moved right next to her. She forced up a smile. Sorry?
That's the employee parking area.
Oh, Maya said. Is it? I'm sorry. I'm so ditzy sometimes. She tried a tee-hee, aren't I a ditz laugh. I parked in the wrong place. Or maybe I wanted the job so badly.
No, you didn't.
Pardon? He pointed with his beefy finger back the other way.
You parked over there, on the other side.
Oh, did I? I'm such an airhead sometimes. She stood there. He stood there.
We don't let no one into the employee area, he said. Company policy. See, some of the guys, they'll come out and they'll wait by a dancer's car. You know what I mean? Or they'll try to get the license plate and call her. We gotta escort the girls out here sometimes so they can avoid the creepy guys. You get my drift?
Yes, but I'm not a creepy guy.
No, ma'am. You certainly are not.
She stood there. He stood there.
Come on, he said. I'll escort you to your car.
There was one of those giant warehouse stores across the street and maybe 100 yards down the road. Maya parked in the lot, positioning her car so she could stake out the employee lot of leather and lace. Her hope was that someone would eventually get into the red Buick Verano and then she could follow him. And then what? One step at a time. But what about all that nonsense about looking several steps down the road when you make a plan? She didn't know. Preparedness was all well and good, but there was also a little something called improvisation. Her next move would be dependent on where that red Buick went. If, say, the car stopped for the night at a residence, then maybe her move would be to figure out who lived at that house. A strip club gets a fairly varied clientele in dress, if not gender. There were the blue-collar guys in work boots and jeans. There were business suits. There were guys in cargo shorts and t-shirts. There was even a group of guys in golf clothes, looking like they just came off the links. Hey, maybe the food was good. Who knew? An hour passed. 4 people left the employee area of the lot. 3 entered. None involved the red Buick Verano parked against the fence. Maya had time to sort through all the recent developments, but time wasn't helping her. She didn't need time. She needed more information. The red Buick was leased by a company called WTC Limited. Was that something the Burkettes held? Caroline had talked about payouts to and from offshore accounts and anonymous companies. Could WTC Limited be something like that? Had Claire known the driver of the red Buick Verano? Had Joe? Maya and Joe had several joint accounts. She opened them on her phone app and brought up the credit card charges. Had Joe visited Leather and Lace? If so, it wasn't showing up on the statements. Then again, would Joe be that stupid? Didn't places like Leather and Lace know that prying wives might check their husband's credit card charges and, knowing Lulu's desire for discretion, use another name? Maybe WTC Limited? With new hope, she searched for any charge to WTC Limited. Nothing. The club was in Carlstadt, New Jersey. She searched for any charges made to that city. Again, nothing. Someone parked 2 spots away from the red Buick. The car door opened and a pole dancer got out. Yes, Maya knew her occupation. Long blonde hair, shorts that barely covered half a cheek, a boob job that lifted them high enough to double as earrings. You didn't need the pole dancing equivalent of gaydar to see that this woman was either a pole dancer or a 16-year-old boy's fantasy come to life. When the shapely pole dancer entered through the employee side door, a man stepped out. The man wore a Yankees baseball cap pulled down low over his sunglass-covered eyes. He kept his head down, his shoulders hunched, the way one does when they want to blend in or hide. Maya sat up. The man sported one of those unruly beards superstitious athletes grow when they're on a playoff run. She couldn't get a look at him, obviously, but still there was something familiar. Maya started up her car. The man kept his head down, hurried his step, and slid into the red Buick Verano. So this was her man. Following him would be risky. Maybe her best move was to confront him now. He might spot a tail. She might lose him. So maybe she should stop with the subtlety, pull back into Leather and Lace's parking lot, block his car, demand answers. But there were problems with that scenario, too. There was security there, probably a fair amount of it. Meathead would interfere. Others, too. Strip clubs were used to handling incidents. Shane's work as an MP backed up what Meathead had said. Men often hung out after the club closed, hoping to approach some dancer they sincerely believed was interested in more than what was in their wallet, though that was never, ever the case. Guys who lack confidence in so many ways still manage to delude themselves into thinking they are irresistible to all women. In short, there would be security. Better to get him alone, no? The red Buick backed out of the space and started toward the exit. Maya was on it. She merged onto the Patterson Plank Road and immediately felt unsettled. Why? Was it her imagination, or did the red Buick hesitate as if somehow she had already been spotted? That was hard to fathom. She was a full three cars back. 2 minutes into the ride, Maya realized that tailing him wouldn't work. She hadn't quite realized it before, but now that her plan was in action, she could see more issues raising their heads. Problem one, he clearly knew her car. He had, in fact, tailed it himself on numerous occasions. One look in the rearview mirror would be all he'd need to put it together. Problem two, Lulu or Billy or Meathead or someone else at the club could have warned him about her visit, in fact, probably had. So Buick Yankees cap would be on guard. He might, in fact, have already spotted her. Problem three, depending on how long he had been following Maya, Buick Yankees cap could have done the same thing Maya did with Hector's truck, put a GPS tracker on it. For all she knew, he had known that she was parked outside the club from the moment she arrived. This could all be a setup. This could all be a trap. She could back off, figure out a better way in, and come back to Leather and Lace with a plan. But no way. Enough with the passive approach. She needed answers, and if that meant using a little less caution and erring on the side of boldness, so be it. They were still in the industrial area, a few miles from the major highway. Once the Buick was there, she'd have no chance. Maya reached into her purse. The handgun was within easy reach. The traffic light turned red. The Buick glided to a stop, first car in line in the right lane. Maya hit the accelerator and veered first left, then back to the right. She knew that she would have to move fast. She passed the Buick on its left, spun the wheel, and angled her car so she blocked him. She was out of the car, keeping the gun low and out of sight. Yes, this was ridiculously risky, but she had done the calculations. If he tried to back up or make a run for it, she would shoot his tires. Would someone call the police? Probably. But she was willing to take that risk. Worst case scenario, the police arrest her. She would then tell them about her husband's murder and that this guy had started following her. She might then have to play the hysterical widow a bit, but there was little chance she would be convicted of something serious. Within seconds, Maya was at the red Buick. The glare on the windshield prevented her from seeing the driver, but that wouldn't last. She considered going to the driver's side window and threatening him with the gun through the glass, but in the end, she opted for the passenger side door. It might be unlocked, in which case she could just slip inside. If it wasn't, she could make the same threat through that window. She reached out, grabbed the door handle, and pulled. The car door opened. Maya slipped inside and lifted the gun toward the man in the Yankees cap. The man turned and smiled at her.
Hey, Maya.
She sat there, stunned. He took the baseball cap off and said,
"Nice to finally meet in person."
She wanted to pull the trigger. She had almost dreamed about this moment, seeing him, pulling the trigger, blowing him away. Her first thought was that simple, instinctive, and primitive. Kill your enemy. But if she did, forgetting the legal and moral implications for the moment, the answers would probably die with him. And now, more than ever, she had to know the truth. Because the man following her in the red Buick, the man who had secretly communicated with Claire in the weeks before her murder, was none other than Corey the Whistle. Chapter 14. Why are you following me? Corey was still smiling.
Put away the gun, Maya.
In all the photographs, Corey Rudzinski was well-dressed, baby-faced, and clean-shaven. The scruffy beard, the baseball cap, the dad jeans, all made for a pretty good disguise. Maya just stared, still pointing the gun at him. Horns started blaring.
We're blocking up traffic, Corey said. Move your car, and then we can talk.
I want to know.
And you will. But first, move your car to the side of the road.
More horns. Maya reached across and grabbed his car keys. No way she was about to let him slip away. Don't go anywhere.
No plans to, Maya.
She pulled her car toward the curb, parked it, and slid back into the Buick's passenger seat. She handed him the keys.
I bet you're confused, Corey said.
Doctor understatement. Maya was stunned. Like a boxer on his heels, she needed time to recover, to take the standing eight count, get her head back into the fight. Explanations for how this could be rose into view, but in every case, she was able to shoot them down with too much ease. Nothing made sense. She started with an obvious question. How do you know my sister? His smile faded away when she asked that, replaced by what appeared to be genuine sadness, and she realized why. Maya had said, "Do you know?" Present tense. Corey Rudzinski had indeed known Claire. He had, Maya could see, cared for her. He faced forward.
Let's take a ride, he said.
I'd rather you just answer the question.
I can't stay out here. Too exposed. They won't stand for it either.
They? He didn't reply. He drove her back to Leather and Lace and parked in the same spot. Two cars pulled in behind them. Had the cars been out on the road with them? Maya thought that maybe they had. The employee entrance had a keypad. Corey punched in the numbers. Maya memorized the code just in case.
Don't bother, he said. Someone still has to buzz you in, too.
You type in a code and a guard checks you out?
That's right.
Sounds like overkill. Or maybe paranoia.
Yes, I bet it does.
The corridor was dark and stank like dirty socks. They walked through the club. The Disney song A Whole New World was blaring. The pole dancer wore a Princess Jasmine from Aladdin costume. Maya frowned. Seemed dress-up wasn't just for preschool. He led her past a beaded curtain and into a private back room. The room was gold and green and looked like a Midwest cheerleader uniform had inspired the decor. You knew I came here before, Maya said, that I talked to that Lulu.
Yes.
She was putting it together. So you probably watched me leave. You saw me head over toward your car, so you knew I was following you. He didn't reply. And those two cars that pulled in behind us, they with you?
Overkill, Maya. Paranoia. Have a seat.
On this? Maya frowned. How often do they clean the upholstery?
Often enough,
Sit.
They both did.
I need you to understand what I do, he began.
I understand what you do.
Oh?
You think secrets are bad, so you reveal them. Damn the repercussions.
That's not far off, actually.
So let's skip the rationale. How do you know my sister?
She contacted me, Corey said.
When?
Corey hesitated.
I'm not a radical. I'm not an anarchist. It's nothing like that.
Maya didn't give a shit what it was like. She wanted to know about Claire and why he was following her. But she didn't want to antagonize him unnecessarily or discourage openness. She stayed silent.
You're right about secrets. I started out as a hacker. I'd break into places for fun. Then big companies and governments, like a game. But then I started to see all the secrets. I'd see how the powerful abuse the normal man.
He caught himself.
You don't want to hear that speech, do you?
Not really.
Anyway, the point is, we don't hack much anymore. We give whistleblowers the freedom to tell the truth, that's all. Because people cannot police themselves when it comes to power and money. It's simple human nature. We twist the truth to suit our self-interest. So the people who work for cigarette companies, they aren't all horrible, evil people. They just can't make themselves do the right thing because it's not in their self-interest. We humans are wonderful at self-justification.
So much for not getting the speech. A waitress came into the room wearing a top that had the relative width of a headband.
Drink?
She said.
Maya?
Corey asked. I'm fine.
Get me a club soda with lime, please.
The waitress left. Corey turned toward Maya.
People think I want to weaken governments or businesses. Actually, I want to do the opposite. I want to strengthen them by forcing them to do the right thing, the just thing. If your government or business is built on lies, then build them on truth instead. So no secrets. No secrets anywhere. If a billionaire is paying off a government official to get that oil field, let the people know. In your case, if your government is killing civilians in a war,
that's not what we were doing.
I know, collateral damage. Great nebulous term, don't you think? Whatever you believe, accident or intentional, we the people should know. We may still want to fight the war, but we should know. Businessmen lie and cheat. Sports figures lie and cheat. Governments lie and cheat.
We shrug.
But imagine a world where that didn't happen. Imagine a world where we have full accountability instead of unjust authority. Imagine a world where there are no abuses or secrets.
Are there unicorns and pixie dust in this world? Maya asked. He smiled.
You think me naive?
Corey, can I call you Corey?
Please.
How do you know my sister?
I told you she contacted me.
When?
A few months before her death. She sent an email to my website. It eventually found its way to me.
What did it say?
Her email? She wanted to talk to me.
What about?
What do you think, Maya? You.
The waitress came back.
Two club sodas with lime.
She gave Maya a friendly wink.
I know you didn't order one, hun, but you might get thirsty.
She handed the drinks off, gave Maya a big smile, and then strode away. You're not trying to tell me Claire was the one who leaked that combat tape?
No.
Because there is no way she'd even have access.
No, Maya, that's not what I'm saying. She contacted me after I released your tape.
That made more sense, yet answered nothing. What did she say?
That's why I'm trying to explain our philosophy about whistleblowing, about accountability and freedom.
I'm not following.
Claire contacted me because she was afraid I was going to reveal the rest of your tape.
Silence.
You know what I mean, don't you, Maya?
Yes.
You told Claire about it?
I told her everything. We told each other everything. At least that's what I thought.
Corey smiled at her.
She wanted to protect you. She asked me not to release the audio.
And you didn't.
That's correct.
Just because Claire asked.
He took a sip of his drink.
I know a man. A group, really. They think they're like mine, but they're not. They reveal secrets too, but on an individual scale. Cheating spouses, steroid users, revenge porn, stuff like that. Personal deceptions. If you want to do something unethical anonymously online, this group will out you. Like those hackers of that adultery website did last year.
And you don't agree with that?
I don't.
Why not? Aren't they ridding the world of secrets?
Funny,
he said. What?
Your sister raised that point, too. I won't say we are hypocritical, but we do pick and choose our spots, don't we? No way around it. I didn't reveal the audio on your tape for, yes, my own selfish reasons. I had planned to do it later, to maximize the impact of the revelation. More hits on my website, more exposure for my cause.
So why didn't you?
Your sister. She asked me not to.
Just like that.
She was convincing. You, Maya, are just a pawn, she explained. You are forced to be what you are by a corrupt system. Part of me wants to reveal that because, again, the truth will indeed set you free. But you'd be irreparably harmed. Claire convinced me that if I did that, I'd be no better than my colleagues who nail small-time cheaters.
Maya was getting tired of the circling. You were more interested in hurting the war cause than hurting me.
Yes.
So you provided the people with your own narrative. Let them hate the government. If they heard the audio, they might blame me instead.
I guess that's true.
Replacing the truth with his own